for the record, the time is 8:03. I'm Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, co-chair of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. I'm going to be chairing this meeting. I'd like to introduce my co-chair, Representative Anna Fairclough. I'd also like to introduce Sonia Heimer, who is my committee aide for this committee. And in the audience section is Renee Loges, who is Representative Fairclough's committee aide. Also like to introduce Chris Jones, who is the committee secretary, and Beth Potter from the LIO. And finally, the members present are Kurt Olson, Representative Olson, and Representative Salmon, and I think the rest are in transit between Sitka and Anchorage at the moment. For the first half of this meeting, we'll be hearing from State Assessor Steve Van Sant, and for the second half of the meeting, we'll be hearing from members of the Alaska Municipal League. In order to make sure that we have time for both presentations, we'll try to limit each to 1 hour, including time for questions from the committee members. Mr. Van Sant, if you'd like to come forward, you may begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Steve Van Sant, State Assessor with the Department of Community Economic Development. This is going to be fairly informal. We're not going to have an overhead on this. We passed out the material. I believe you got it yesterday, so you have it in front of you. What we're going to talk about today, I'm kind of preaching to the choir here because I see some friendly, familiar faces. Thank you. Is the taxation for municipalities and the lack of alternatives they have out there. I've been asked by several municipalities to advise them of what alternatives they may have out there as opposed to property tax, because property taxes are starting to get high across the state, so they want to know what alternatives they may have. So we put together this presentation. We made this presentation last year at AML, and It received some good marks, I think, from the municipalities that we were talking to. Unfortunately, municipalities are getting the short end of the stick in some areas. Consequently, we are seeing increases in municipal property tax across the state. If you look at your handout, it kind of summarizes some of the types of taxes that are available to municipalities. We have a property tax, a head tax, MVRT, which is motor vehicle registration tax, employment tax, a bed tax, fuel transfer tax, business license tax, sales and use taxes, a value-added tax, severance tax, property transfer tax, and the big one that's getting a lot of attention today is the gross receipts tax. That sounds like a lot of different taxes out there. And some of them are very popular. Sales tax, for example, is very popular across the state. We have about 100 municipalities that have authorized sales taxes, and that's the way they make their money. Property tax is not available to every municipality simply because the tax base isn't there. If we get in the lower Kuskokwim area, there's just no tax base there for them to get a property tax. So property taxes, we've got about two or three, maybe four areas of the state that could institute a property tax and do okay with it if they form into boroughs. Unfortunately, they're not boroughs yet. So what we have is municipalities collected a little over $1 billion in 2006, about $1.1 billion in local revenue. About $223 million of that was sales tax and other special taxes, and $905 million of that was property tax. Now the $905 million we had, about $220 million of that was oil and gas property tax that goes to municipalities. The majority of that goes to North Slope, Fairbanks, and Kenai and Valdez. So when we get to looking at what the reason for our taxes are, the primary reason for it is intended to distribute the tax burden for services municipalities give to municipalities as equitably as we can. And in many cases, the property tax is thought to be that methodology. The methods that we have seek to fairly distribute, and that's all we're doing, is saying we need X dollars in order to provide services for municipalities. How are we going to get people to pay for that? Well, there's only a few ways we can do that. And so the reason we have those taxes is just to find a way to fairly distribute that tax burden to everybody. Now, have municipal tax revenues increased over the years? Of course they have. If you look at the about the fourth or fifth page, the one entitled "Have Municipality Tax Revenues Increased?" From 1995 to 2005, we had sales tax revenues increased about 63.5%. Bed taxes have increased 68%. Local property taxes have increased 75%. And just as a side note, even though the property tax revenues increased 75%, the full value determination has only increased 52% over that same time period. Oil and gas property tax revenue has actually decreased 15% over that time frame, mainly because the oil and gas sources are depleting, so we're going to see a decline in that and keep going. The next page actually is a graph that I've taken from AML, and it shows exactly why taxes have increased. And if you look at it, they call this their iceberg graph. It shows that municipal property tax increases coincide with state cuts and increases to municipalities from the state, revenue sharing, grants, etc. Senior citizen exemption, we'll talk about that in a minute. But if you look at that graph, it shows exactly why taxes have increased, the burdens being put on the local municipalities to come up with those revenues. Also, just as a side note, if you have any questions, would you go ahead and ask them now so the answers may be fresh in my mind?
Mr. Vincent?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell us how Alaska's municipal property taxes compare to other jurisdictions, other states?
Alaska property taxes are within the top 15 of the United States. We might be about 18th now. The reason is our property taxes bear the brunt of the revenue sources. Now, if you look at the overall tax burden, we're down at the bottom. We're last in the United States. But if you look just at property taxes, we're up, and they usually use Anchorage to gauge that with because it's the largest municipality, and it's at about 1.7%, 16 mils. So it's up fairly high. So when individuals complain that their property tax burdens are high, they're not mistaken. That is true. Across the United States, we do have a high property tax burden. But when you roll it into the rest of it, income tax, sales taxes, automobile taxes, we're down. The tax burden for families of four, I think the Washington, D.C. does a study, we're down about 45th to 48th, I think. So, but property tax itself is up there while the tax burden is down. Now, when we talk about property taxes, we've had accusations that the property tax system is broken, and we've had legislation introduced last year. We're having some legislation introduced this year that wants to fix the system. And the questions are, is the system really broken? What are the perceptions that we run into, and what are the realities? Well, property tax is the major source of revenue for municipalities, governments, both state and local, throughout the United States. In Alaska, it's accounted for about 80% of total revenues generated. And it should be an effective way of distributing the tax burden. Everybody understands it. Now, they may not like it, but everybody understands it. Property tax is called an ad valorem tax. That's according to value. So everybody understands what the market value of the property is. That's one good thing about it. The assessed value will vary as the market does on it. The property tax is one of the few taxes that homeowners have an appeal process with. That sales tax, the only process they have to appeal that is go to the council or the assembly when they're setting the tax rate and talk about it then. The property tax actually has an appeal period where they can go in and talk with the assessor, then talk with the Board of Equalization to discuss the valuation of their property. And if they're not satisfied with it, they can go on to the BOE and present their case and see if they can get it. The property tax is hated by everybody. That's one reason why assessors don't like to see people behind them. It makes us nervous. I've been doing this for about 35, 40 years in this state, and I still don't like people behind me because you never know what's going to happen. I just finished doing the full value determination for the proposed Deltana borough. And that was interesting. People are not pleased to think that they might be in a borough up there and have to pay property taxes. But it beats out its nearest competitor of federal income tax by 2-1. People despise a property tax. But it's widely used. 48 states and D.C. use it. Other taxing districts in 15 states use it, and 15 states have adopted a statewide property tax, mainly because the property tax actually does more than just property taxes. We get hundreds of calls every year from mortgage companies outside, from people outside looking for property in the unorganized borough. Unfortunately, we have no tax records, property records, that we can help them with. People trying to get a loan out in Bethel will call us for a property ID number to get some information. We don't have anything like that. So mortgage companies, lending institutions do use this information. So it's not just property tax. There are other reasons for having it.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes, ma'am.
When you say people hate the property tax, which I really agree with you, having paid the property tax for a number of years, do they hate the property tax more than other taxes?
In our experience, it is the federal income tax is number one. Nobody likes to pay federal income tax. Number two is property tax across the United States. Nobody wants to pay it, and it is hated. Now, the hate seems to be more when you have to pay it in those two lump sums. If your house is paid off and you don't have a mortgage company where the mortgage company is collecting a little bit from you every month, and you get to make your payments and your tax payments are made every month, and it doesn't hurt so bad. But if once your house is paid off and you have to come up with that money on your own in two huge payments, then it really hurts. So, we are finding that mortgage companies are increasing the withholding because the taxes are increasing each year. And the reasons for that are multifaceted. We have, number one, cost of services going up. Number two, we have exemptions. Everybody wants an exemption. Every nonprofit corporation believes somebody else ought to pay their property taxes. And unfortunately, it's those of us who don't have the nonprofit corporation that has to pick up that tab. So, when we get to using assessed values, there are several reasons, or several ways that we use them. But our mill rates, everybody thinks the assessed value drives the mill rates, and that's not true. The mill rates simply are a mathematical calculation. In order to determine the mill rate, we divide the budget by the total assessed value, and that gives us a number. In theory, if the budget stays the same, the assessed values increase, the mill rate should decrease. And it does do that. In many cases, it does do that. Now,
Don't you think, however, that perhaps in the municipalities that there may be some pressure for the assessors to evaluate the assessed value more frequently when times are tight than when they're not tight?
Well, the assessors are required to come up with assessed values every year, new assessed values, market values every year by January 1. Now, we have, by statute, a requirement that visits be made to property on a cyclical basis, whatever that cycle may be. Anchorage has a 6-year cycle. I think Kodiak's on a 4-year cycle. I could be wrong. Excuse me. But every so often, every property is visited by the assessor's office. But every year, the value is redetermined to come up with market value. Now, as far as pressure on the assessor's office to come up with higher values or lower values, it simply doesn't happen. The assessor, my office oversees all the assessor's office. And if we find where a municipality is putting pressure on an assessor, we will intervene to make sure that that doesn't happen. The assessor gives us his total statistics every year so we understand what they're doing and how they're doing it. So we can see if they're trying to shave values off, if they're trying to not do their job in accordance with state law. So I found very little evidence of any tampering, if you will, the assessor's office to try to keep values high or low. Now, everybody wants to see the values lower, but
they're trying to sell their house.
Well, exactly. Nobody wants to see their equity gone when they go to sell their house. The problem is we're a non-disclosure state, so we don't get all the information on a sales data when a sale occurs. So we have to scamper and try to get our data wherever we can. We don't get it all, but we get a lot of it. If this is the total market, we probably get all of this in the middle. We don't get the ends out here, and that's where we have the problems. So the assessor can come up with his value. And one misconception I think the public has is that, well, the assessor hasn't been out to my house in 2 or 3 years, so how do they know what the value is? Well, in reality, the answer is this. If the assessor has good data and you haven't changed your house, you haven't added to it, you've maintained it, you know, in like most people will, the value can be redetermined through a statistical analysis every year through just looking at our sales data, unless something occurs to that house. And that's the reason the cycles are there, so we can go back and see if something has changed. But if it hasn't changed, it's not hard for the assessor to revalue that every year. So, but we are required by cycle to go around once every so many years to determine whether or not there has been changes to the property. The assessor's office, they are professional. We have educational classes every year for them, and they do try to maintain their educational quality up there. Now, one of your pages shows you how we determine mill rates and taxes, and here's what it looks like. In this case, we had a budget of $150,000, then we had an assessed value of $15 million. If we divide the 150 by the $15 million, we come up with 10 mills. So on a $150,000 house, that means the taxes would be $1,500. Now, on the next page, we said, well, if we increase only the assessed value, we had the same budget amount. We had $150,000, but our values went up to $25 million instead of $15 million. It lowered our mill rate to 6 mills. So the taxes on that same $150,000 house is now $900 rather than $1,500. So that just shows that, yes, the values can go up, but in theory, if the values go up and the budget stays the same, the revenue requirement stays the same, the mill rate will go down and everybody's share will go down accordingly. That doesn't always happen, but that's the way the system works. People don't understand that sometimes. Now, what causes the changes in assessed values? Market shifts, increase in property demands. I live in the Matsu Valley. The Matsu Valley is one of the fastest growing areas in the state. We've seen tremendous increases in our assessed values over the year. The value of my house has gone up tremendously. Do I think the assessor's wrong? I wish he was for tax purposes, and I hope he's right for selling purposes. So it's one of those good guy, bad guy situations. Decrease in supply of properties. In some southeast communities, you have places where it is difficult to build on all areas of all the land. So the supply of land is limited. So we have to look at it. You're not going to build a whole bunch of them. And then income levels change. That changes values too. Now, what causes changes in our local tax bills? Well, one big item, and I'm sure you're going to hear a lot about it this session, is local property tax exemptions. I know there's a bill in now to increase the senior citizen exemption, and we'll talk about that here in a second. But that's a big dollar loss to municipalities. Local services increases or decreases. You know, it costs money to maintain our roads. It costs money to pay our policemen and our firemen. And they're not going to work for free. So as those costs increase, it's going to increase the bottom line for the municipality. State shared revenue increases, decreases. You know, we've been asking for years for state shared revenue. And if we look at that ice cube graph again, you'll see that cuts in state revenues correlate directly with increases in local revenues. It's got to be made up somewhere. If it costs $100 to provide services, that money has to come from somewhere. If the state was putting in $50, the municipality only had to put up $50. But now if the state's only putting in $10, the municipality has to come up with $90. It has to drive the revenue somewhere. On the next page is the senior citizen tax exemption. That's the graph that we have for 2006. For 2006, that was over $40 million. $40 million. Now I'm working on scenarios now for the proposed bill that would increase the exemption to $250,000. I haven't got the numbers yet. but we'll have them in a week or so. But the bottom line is it's going to increase the loss to municipalities. The bill does not have a corresponding funding amount with it. So this is going to cost everybody in this room, if they live in a municipality that has property taxes, is going to cost us more. We have to make that up.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you. Has there been any kind of discussion on the revenue sharing scenario versus actually funding the senior property tax exemption to encourage incorporations of boroughs?
There has, not at my level, but there has been discussions on that.
Could you point me in a direction to find some research on that?
Well, Thursday, I believe you have a joint session, and I believe the commissioner and Mike Black will also be here, so you could certainly ask.
Directly to the administration?
Yes.
Thank you.
On this issue, this hasn't been funded since 1996. And I know, Representative Fairclough, you just left Anchorage. You know Anchorage bears about half this loss throughout the state. So Anchorage is probably up to a little over $20 million this year in loss for the senior citizen tax exemption program. I'm not saying it's a bad exemption. I'm just saying that it costs every taxpayer in the municipality. We have to make up this loss somehow.
I was thinking of more investigating the notion that the legislature has tried over a period of time, decades actually, to encourage incorporation. And I don't want to disenfranchise any smaller communities that can't handle property taxes nor move us that way, but it seems like there's a discussion and some fallout points that would help determine why we do revenue sharing versus funding actual mandates that the state has given local communities.
Well, AML may talk about this a little later, more than I can, but the biggest mandate from a property tax point of view that municipalities seem to have problems with is this one tax exemption. Now, in smaller communities, it's not a big issue. For Anchorage, it's a big issue, but for small communities, while it's an issue, it's not that big of an issue. Revenue sharing certainly would overpower funding of this program for some of the smaller communities. There's just not that much out there for them. And revenue sharing helps every community, whether they have property tax or not.
When we look at the exemptions that are allowed by state government, is that consistent with other allowable exemptions throughout the nation, or do we have exemptions in place that are different?
We have, in Alaska, we have two different types of exemptions. We have the mandate exemptions, like the senior citizen exemption.
I think it's been amended, and it's an optional program now, that the state, I believe, allowed local municipalities to either provide it or not provide it now. I thought that Senator Donnelly, before his departure, may have been
supposed to. No. The senior citizen exemption is a mandated exemption currently. Now, we have an optional on top of that, that one municipality in the state, and that's Kenai, has opted into, that will allow a municipality to exempt everything over $150,000. But right now, every municipality has to exempt the first $150,000. Kenai is currently looking at the possibility of trying to trim their exemption from an uncapped exemption down to something they can live with. They're losing a lot of money on this thing. And I think they've thrown around the figure of $250,000 to $300,000. But that's the optional exemption portion of it. As far as other states having those types of exemptions, we have mandate exemptions, senior citizens, schools, churches, just like charitable property, just like every other state. And we're one of the very rare, one of the few states that has what we call optional exemptions. And we have a whole list of them, one of them being the senior citizen exemption over $150,000. We have the residential exemption, which Kenai, Anchorage, Fairbanks, North Slope, Valdez all take advantage of. That's a $20,000 residential exemption. Now, many states have what they call a homestead exemption, which is very similar to the $20,000 exemption we have now. So does that answer your question, Representative Fairclough?
I'll look at the optional ones and then
okay.
Ask the questions.
Now, the pros of the property tax is, number one, it's a stable and reliable source of revenue. Property tax systems are generally more open and visible than other administrative assistants for other taxes. In other words, the taxpayer knows exactly what's happening. They get the assessment. They can go in and talk to the assessor about the valuation. They know that that valuation is going to be multiplied by their mill rate in order to come up with their taxes. We offer an appeal system unlike any other tax systems on property tax. And taxes are secured by property, and so taxes are difficult to evade. That's one of the few tax systems that we have where you're almost guaranteed payment. Sales taxes, we have many municipalities that come to us where they'll have a major store in the community, and they refuse to pay the taxes after they've collected them, so they end up having to go to court on this. Property taxes, you have a threat of seizure of the property, so the taxes are generally paid. Collection costs are less expensive than other types of taxes. That's because of the way the system's built as far as being able to take the property for non-payment of taxes.
How often does that happen, that properties are taken for non-payment of taxes? In my local newspaper, it seems like each year you read the list of people who are subject to foreclosure. Yet there never seems to be a foreclosure sale, and the people are still back on the same list again the next year.
What we find pretty much statewide is that a lot of people don't pay their property taxes until they absolutely have to. The penalties are not that harsh out there where they can use their money better than they can use it to derive more revenue than they could if they just went ahead and gave it to the municipality. So they'll go ahead and let it go on the foreclosure list and come in and redeem it at the last minute. And some individuals do this every year. It's just so they've got use of their money up until the last minute. And as far as foreclosures go, in reality, we have a very low foreclosure rate in the state. You would think that Anchorage, being the largest municipality, would have a humongous amount of property that's foreclosed and sold, but there's very little, respectively, foreclosed on and sold in the municipality of Anchorage. So there's not a lot of it. What we do find is the property that is foreclosed upon is usually sometimes property that is unwanted by the owner. Maybe it's got some contamination on it or something they want to try to get out of it. So they'll let that go back to the municipality. But we have a very low foreclosure rate in the state of Alaska.
Thank you.
The cons of the property tax. Number one is that taxes increase proportionally more than income, and that's true. The property tax is not tied to income at all. It's on its own out there based on the local budget amount and based on the valuation. Now, the valuation, in theory, shouldn't have that much to do with it. Unfortunately, the mill rates don't always go down, so an increase in valuation does many times relate to an increase in taxes.
Vincent, could you speak to valuation? In the state of California, they have capped how their valuation can increase. Are you going to speak to later in our presentation how that can impact a community or a state?
In general, yes, we will.
I'll hold that.
Okay. Property tax falls on unrealized capital gains and may be poorly related to cash flow, and that's truly it. That's one reason why the senior citizen exemption was set at what we thought at one time was a high amount. $150,000 when it was set seemed like a high amount. And we got that number based on what the value of a homestead was worth way back when, and we thought, well, we'll overshoot it. When that number came up, it seemed like it would cover for a while, and it did. But unfortunately, we see property valuations increasing more and more. There's not going to be more land made, so we know it's going to increase forever. It's just the way it's going to have to be. Large lump sum payments often associated with property tax make the magnitude of the tax more apparent and unpopular, especially when an individual has to pay that in those two lump sum payments.
Why do the municipalities do it in two lump sum payments? Why don't they do it like you pay your water and sewer and your garbage? You pay that each month. Since the municipalities know that this is difficult and irksome for people to be paying it in that lump sum, why don't they do it over the course of a year? What would be the disadvantage of that?
Well, the number one disadvantage would be the bookkeeping nightmare, to try to keep up with that.
Would that be more of a bookkeeping nightmare, though, than sending out the bill each month for the water and sewer, which they do?
Well, water and sewer is not always a municipal function. Your bills are not always a municipal function.
In many places, they are.
If I could respond only from my experience on the past, one of them is a cash flow issue, too. Some municipalities or organizations have to borrow to be able to provide monthly services for police and public safety individuals. And so if we were collecting on a monthly basis, unless we could get out in front of the collection, we wouldn't have any money to pay for those services. So in addition to just the bookkeeping nightmare, which I agree on a personal level, it would be much easier to incorporate it into a monthly payment versus a lump sum payment.
That's true. And the other issue is bond payments. Bond payments are a lump sum issue the municipality has to make, and depending on the timing of those. So could it be done? You know, certainly the private sector could come up with something like that, but they're going to want to make some money on that. Like the mortgage company, when the mortgage company collects each year, that makes it easier for people. Although they're still upset about it, but they still make it on a monthly basis. So everybody with a mortgage will make those payments on a monthly basis. Only those individuals who paid their mortgages off or who have a contract or something like that have to make those lump sum payments.
Thank you.
To follow up on that, though, Representative LeDoux has an excellent point in there's a limited number of people that actually own their home. And so there could be a consideration for those people, or at least a discussion on those who actually own their home to pay differently than those who have financing through a bank. So that would accomplish for those particular individuals who typically are more senior, at least from my perspective. I don't own my own home today, but I'll bet you that number's a lot smaller. Could you comment on how many have to make those types of payments? Do we know that off of the data?
Well, we don't have that kind of data at our office, so it would be hard for us to estimate. But the issue is not just those who don't have a commercial mortgage loan. It would be those who have a contract between individuals, too. Like if I was buying your property from you under contract with you, you may or may not allow me to make monthly payments for the taxes, for example. So we would not have that kind of information. So it'd be very difficult for us to find. Well, I guess we could do that, but it would be difficult to find that information. Another con of the property tax is that more organizations are requesting and receiving exemptions from the tax, which cause a shift in tax burden. Many of you are aware of the issue we had last year with the Anchorage Baptist Temple requesting more exemptions for their property in areas that the assessor did not believe that fit the existing statutes. And so the law was changed to broaden that exemption. Now, is that going to increase a tremendous amount? No. But every dollar that's exempt is a dollar that other taxpayers are going to have to make up. Now, it's a very expensive system to set up and maintain compared to other tax methods. But once it gets going, once you get it set up, it's fairly efficient cost-wise to maintain that system. And like I said before, it is used for other than property tax purposes. Now, is the property tax system in Alaska broken? Does an increase in the assessed value equal an increase in the tax burden? Unfortunately, it usually does, because our cost of services is increasing and our state revenues keep decreasing. But that doesn't mean the property tax burdens are uniformly excessive. The system's not broken, it's just misunderstood. Somebody's always going to be upset if they have to pay taxes. They're always going to be upset. And they'll continue to demand the property tax system be either eliminated or fixed. We have that in Anchorage all the time. There's always somebody yelling that we need to fix this tax system. We have radio programs in Anchorage that just harp on it consistently, that this is the unfair tax, we shouldn't be taxing people, and yet they don't come up with an alternative of how we're going to pay for the services we get. And so it's always easy to yell that I don't like the system, but we need a system that we can pay for these services. Effective tax burdens will vary dramatically from household to household. If you have two people living side by side, both in $200,000 homes, one person making $100,000 a year and the other person making $50,000 a year, the effective tax rate is going to be double for the smaller income. The problem is we don't have an income tax. We don't get into what people are making. That's not part of what we're talking about here. The services generally are delivered to the property. Education is a big one. We all know about that. But the services that a municipality delivers is generally delivered to the property, so the property benefits from it. So that's the reason the property tax system actually was invented. Burden shifting guarantees a new group of aggrieved taxpayers. If you shift the burden from, and you have this in Anchorage going on ever since the Anchorage Baptist Temple requested and received the exemption, now you have another group of people who say, well, this is horrible. We're going to sue. We think it's terrible. We shouldn't have to pay their taxes. Well, we've just shifted the tax burden to somebody else, and that's exactly what's happened. If we assume the system is broken, then what do we do? Well, some assessment limitations was introduced last year. It's been introduced this year. Do we limit the tax rates, the assessments, both, or try something different? What are the ramifications if we do that, and are there other alternatives? Well, with assessment limits, it doesn't reduce the total tax burden. It merely redistributes them. Generally, capping assessments benefits those with rapidly increasing values, but, and we have studies that prove this one, lower valued properties will tend to pay more in taxes due to the tax shifting. There was a study done in Idaho which showed that capping those assessment increases actually hurt the lower valued properties and the lower income people, so it tends to be regressive, than it did the higher income people because they were paying a larger burden when you looked at the market value. So if you have a piece of property that's not moving in value, one that's moving up rapidly, but you're forcing that value increase down, the people who are not increasing in value are going to be the ones that actually pay for the shift in taxes. Now, it creates an appearance of limiting a tax. Well, in fact, it falls short of helping the needy whose values may not increase in value as rapidly as other properties. If we have these people whose values aren't increasing, but we have these people over here whose values are increasing rapidly, and we keep forcing them down, it's going to cause these people who are not moving actually to pay more tax. Limitations that result in a disproportionate changes in values will create winners and losers. It happens, and no matter what we do, it's going to create winners, and it's going to create losers. Like any property tax exemption, non-limited parcels will pay for the tax relief of assessment limited parcels. So in other words, the people whose values aren't increasing are going to pay for that increase over here of the people whose values are increasing because we're artificially limiting them from going up. And the biggest surprise is that the value limits will increase taxes on value limited parcels if their limitation is proportionally smaller than that of the average limitation. In other words, if you have a 5% limit change and you're seeing that these values only went up 2%, those that go up 5% or 20%, we're forcing them down to the 5%. These people are actually going to see a larger increase in their tax rates or in their tax bills. 19 states currently have limits on assessment growth, but some are now questioning its effectiveness. Everybody's heard the horror stories of Prop 13 in California. I just got an email from the Anchorage assessor, Pat McKee, here a few weeks ago, who said that he's living in a house right next door to some people, the same house. He's paying, and I'll just use false numbers here, $100 a year in taxes, while these people are paying $1,000 a year in taxes. He says, it's just not fair. He says, I like it because my tax bill's low, but these poor young people really don't have the money to pay it. So it does create winners and losers. Tax rate limitation constrains the amount of tax rates that can be collected, and it gives marginal protection from rising taxes for property owners. And that's just for the rate limitations. Now, we've not had any rate limitation. We do have a 30 mil rate limitation in the state. But we've not had any legislation that changes that. The need for municipal revenue doesn't disappear because the tax is unpopular. Regardless of approach taken, any change simply shifts the tax burden. That's all we're going to do. We're going to shift it around. Right now, everybody understands the, your value and your taxes are based on market value. If we change that, we're going to shift it around somewhere. Somebody's going to win, and somebody's going to lose, and somebody's still going to be upset. The incentive value limits is not clear yet, but they may be regressive because rapid valuation growth likely occurs in more desirable high-income areas, forcing low-income taxpayers to subsidize high-income taxpayers. Again, if we have properties that aren't changing in values and those that are, then these that are, we're going to force down, asking everybody to pay more. So if we force them down equal here, we're going to have to raise the mill rate, which means everybody's going to pay more. It's going to hurt the guy with the least increase in value. Alternatives. Number one on the list is reinstate revenue sharing program. There's a direct correlation between property tax increases and cuts in state revenue sharing. I know you've heard that before, but there's just no getting around it. Fund the senior citizen exemption program. This program cost municipalities about $40.3 million in 2006. Other property taxpayers have to foot the bill on that. Also, as an alternative, is allow an increase in local homestead exemption from the present $20,000. Some municipalities want to shift the tax burden to other properties. Valdez and North Slope would like to increase that residential property tax exemption so they can shift more to their commercial and industrial property. Obviously, North Slope Valdez have a lot of oil and gas property. If they increase their residential property tax exemption, then that will shift that over to the oil and gas property. Same way with Fairbanks and Kenai. So if we increase that homestead, what I call the homestead exemption, which is a residential exemption, to say $50,000, it gives local municipalities a little different slant, a little different alternative on where they shift the property tax burden.
So right now, local communities don't have an option of exempting homeowners from, and this is the $20,000.
Madam Chairman, they do have the option of the $20,000. But if we increase that to, say, $50,000, then not to exceed $50,000, then a municipality could choose if they wanted to shift that burden a little more.
But what I'm getting at is the decision as to what the exemption is made by state law. It's not made by local municipal law, correct?
Right. The limitations are made by state law, but it's the option of the municipality to do that if they want to. Now, if you take a small, let's pick on Dillingham, for example. If we said in Dillingham they wanted to enact a $50,000 exemption, chances are what they're going to do is exempt $50,000 and they just have to raise the mill rate to capture that because they have nothing else to shift that to. All right? In Mat-Su, before we started getting the commercial industry built up there, if we would have enacted a residential exemption, there's nothing out there to shift the tax burden to. So all we'd have done is exempt the value and then raise the mill rate, which made the taxes the same thing.
Do you have any history that you can provide for me on how industry and commercial responded to the homestead $20,000 exemption? Because in a nutshell, what we're doing is valuations are based on commercial and residential property per se, at least in what I'm familiar with. And so in Anchorage, 70% of our valuation comes from commercial or industrial property in the heart of the city, and 30% comes from residential. And what the exemption does is shifts the burden of collection of those property taxes over to the commercial developments.
Representative Fairclough, from the oil and gas industry's point of view, it really makes little difference. They're going to pay 20 mils, so it doesn't matter whether they pay it to the municipality or whether they pay it to the state. So they're going to pay their $100. It's just a matter of how they split it up. For local commercial property, it will make a difference. And like I said, in Anchorage, you have a high dollar value placed on commercial property downtown and very little residential. From what we've seen in the past, and the only history we really have is the $20,000 from the $10,000 to the $20,000 increase, we didn't see that much resistance in either Fairbanks, Kenai, or Anchorage when they instituted the $20,000. The $50,000, from one point of view, they can the property taxes are going to be written off anyway, and they can, the commercial can pass it on to the individuals. Do they do that? Not dollar for dollar, obviously. I don't know what the commercial entry may say about a change to $50,000.
I was wondering what the threshold might be for a constitutional challenge as far as fair taxation. Because at the 20,000 limit, you can make the case that the commercial property uses greater police service or some kind of response systems, uses the roads more because they're a magnet to the community and are causing additional costs that residential homeowners aren't paying. So I didn't know what the threshold would be for a fair taxation argument.
We haven't looked at that.
Intriguing. Thank you.
The other alternatives we're looking at is institute a circuit breaker program. A circuit breaker program basically says, and they have them in other states in the lower 48, is where the tax bills will not exceed a certain a percent of a household income, whatever that may be. And so it tends to help the lower income people. So there are 1,000 different programs available out there. We don't have any right now that we can throw out, but certainly if the legislature decides to look at some circuit breaker programs, we can bring some in.
Mr. Van Sant, who has circuit breaker programs? Are they common amongst the other states?
Several other states have many circuit breaker programs. Now, many of them, the threshold to get into them are poverty level. You have to have a very low income in order to take advantage of a circuit breaker program. But in some cases, we need that ability. We do have one deferral program in our laws now, but it is set at the federal poverty guidelines, and it's only a deferral program. So, and that's pretty low. I think it's almost $12,000 a year for a household. That's pretty low in order to own a home and pay your taxes on. So we don't see, in fact, to my knowledge, we have nobody in the state that's taken advantage of that deferral, that exemption, if you will, for our state yet. But the other alternative that we were going to discuss is allow some different property tax deferrals for those who find themselves in financially embarrassed situations where they flat can't afford to pay the taxes. Right now, a municipality has no alternative out there for them. They have to collect the taxes. There's nothing, there's no break they can give them. So in order to give them some tools to work with, they need deferrals, they need circuit breaker programs. Those will help municipalities at least have the tools to help, and it's their choice whether they want to do it or not.
Wouldn't those circuit breaker programs, although I can see that they, on one hand, would be an excellent idea, if we're talking about making them available based upon an income level, I see that as really another method of increasing the senior citizen exemption, which we talked about previously with the problems of that.
It does, but the difference is this. A municipality may have just a handful of individuals. I know when I was the assessor in Anchorage, we had individuals who couldn't pay their taxes for a year or two, come in and ask us to do something. We were so limited what we could do, we couldn't offer any help. Some people fall on hard times, and most municipalities don't have a problem helping those people out, but they do have a problem because the tools aren't available to them. So in order to give a municipality those tools to work with, the circuit breaker programs are a tool out there that they can use.
Thank you.
The other issue is that new programs should have realistic eligibility criteria, so those who can participate, those who need to participate, can participate. Tying it to the federal poverty guidelines, for example, that's pretty low, $12,000 a year. You won't find too many people owning homes that can't afford the taxes at $12,000 a year income. Although I'm not saying people don't do that, but those that do find themselves making very little money a year may not be able to make it, may need a little help getting over that fence of property tax. Any new program should have some kind of inflation indexing. Conclusion, municipalities are struggling to maintain expected service levels to residents. The alternatives are very slim out there. There's very few alternatives. They need to be encouraged to spread the revenue burdens to sales, excise, property taxes, etc., putting all your eggs in one basket. For example, in Fairbanks, we all know what happened with Fairbanks with the initiative to limit the property taxes. All their eggs are in that one basket. So if they had it spread out, it wouldn't hurt quite so bit if they do have that limitation. And municipalities need assistance from the state with revenue. Any type of deferral, limitation, circuit breaker, abatement, or exemption expansion will do little except shift the tax burden, thus creating a different category of aggrieved taxpayers. However, local municipalities should have the tools they need to make their own decisions. It shouldn't be mandated from the state. Any new state mandate exemptions should also be accompanied by state funding. If we, again, we go back to the unfunded mandates, the senior citizen exemption. You know, in the beginning, we did real good as a state. We funded that 100%, and then we found that our revenues were decreasing, so we kept funding that less and less until finally municipalities are now stuck with a little over $40 million. So if there's no more questions, Madam Chairman, I thank you for your attention, and I guess you'll be seeing me sometime in the future on some of these bills that come up.
Thank you very much. Does any member of the committee have any questions? Thank you very much for your presentation. And before we go to the Municipal League, let's take about a 3 to 5 minute break. The next presentation is from the Alaska Municipal League. And if you can identify yourself for the record.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tim Borsey. I'm the president of Alaska Municipal League and also the mayor of City of Skagway.
And I believe we have also on the teleconference Kathy Wasserman to answer any additional questions. Would you like us to ask you questions during your presentation or after your presentation is finished?
Madam Chair, however you'd like to handle it, I'm here for you.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I guess I'll give you a little history on my involvement with Alaska Municipal League. I've been involved with the league actively over the last 7 years, and I know that in that time, revenue sharing has always been one of those things that has been a priority of Alaska Municipal League, and I believe that priority has been there since 1985 when revenue sharing was instated. It's something that we feel strongly about. Alaska is an ownership state, and the resources belong to the people of the state. We have seen a drastic decline over the years, in fact, all the way down to elimination of revenue sharing. And we have been fighting to reinstate this. We feel passionate about it because we want the future of the state of Alaska to be bright. We know the future of the state of Alaska is bright, but we need to have the basic resources to provide the services on the ground in the communities to enable the state of Alaska to develop and evolve over time. And we believe that revenue sharing is a way to achieve that goal. Over the years, coming up on the hill, it's been interesting. A lot of times you get this feeling being in the league that, a legislator sees you coming and go, oh, God, here comes AML. You know, their hands are out open, and what do they want? And that's truly not the way we feel about it. We feel that we are a partner with the state of Alaska. We feel that we have the same goals and objectives of the state of Alaska. We want to see the state organized. We want to see communities healthy. We want to see our children educated. And that's really where we're coming from. Last year, when we were trying to secure funding for revenue sharing, which the governor and the legislature did for us, and we truly appreciate, many of the comments from legislators were, we need to find a long-term solution to this problem. And Alaska Municipal League certainly would love to find a long-term solution to that problem. And so we were challenge to come up with a concept and a way to pay for this program that has been tagged revenue sharing. So the members went to their annual legislative meeting in Homer this summer and met and really tried to hammer out some ideas of ways to pay for it, and you know, senior citizen property tax exemption, all those kinds of things were discussed. And one of the things that came out in that discussion is that, you know, we want it to be a stable program, but, you know, we understand that the state of Alaska is a resource-based state, and there are booms and there are busts and there are cycles. And we felt that it was important that, you know, we as communities within the state share in the wealth and also share in the burden of the cost associated with, you know, the resource cycles within the state. So the league came up with a program, which is a sustainable revenue sharing program. It's an annual appropriation of 6% of the natural resource revenues for the state of Alaska. Those, and as it is defined right now and in the graphs and stuff that you see, those revenues are as it's defined in the permanent fund, and I can speak to that if you'd like to what those specifically are. It's 5% of mineral lease rentals, royalties, royalty sales proceeds, federal mineral revenue sharing payments, and bonuses received by the state. And that's just kind of a base template. We're kind of going with the program that is there now, and obviously, you know, we could define further what natural resources are if that's something that you guys would like to do. But the way the program would work is there would be a base distribution formula, which would be $25,000 to unorganized communities, and those are communities of 25 people or more. $75,000 to all organized municipalities, $250,000 to all boroughs, and the remaining revenue would be allocated on a per capita basis. I think you guys have this stuff. We took the $48 million that is proposed in the governor's budget, and the 2070 revenue sharing per community shows you what the distribution of that $48 million that's in the governor's budget would look like this year. There also is the 6% natural resource comparison, which shows you what the 6% of natural resource revenues, basically $144 million, and how that would be distributed throughout the state as well. And that is kind of, in essence, the core of the program. We certainly, you know, welcome any comments, questions you have on that. We do have a draft bill that we would like to have introduced. We just had a redraft handed out to you guys. We're certainly looking for support in that, and we're hoping that you know, we can strive to find a long-term solution for revenue sharing to ensure that the state and our communities are healthy over the long term.
Mr. Bursey, with respect to those unorganized communities of 25 or more, is there any sort of requirement that they provide at least a rudimentary level of governmental services?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to give $25,000 to you know, some folks that are living outside the community and let them do what they want without providing services. So I think that is something that we certainly need to define. But for the sake of the discussion, working with DCED, you know, that was kind of just a definition that they came up with, just for a base figure, and it shows on the back page of the unincorporated totals are all lumped together, and it's basically $1.7 million. So we would hope that there, I mean, I think Well, I think it would have to be a requirement that there would have to be some sort of, you know, service structure that money, you know, is intended to go to the ground to provide services.
But there is no specific definition of what it takes in this bill.
Not at this time. But we certainly would like to, you know, feather that idea out and come up with a definition.
And does this new draft of this bill include unorganized, unincorporated communities in the organized borough?
You know, this just came off the fax, and I honestly haven't had a chance to read the new version. But I think that would be an intent. But I believe as the bill is written, the $250,000 as it stands now, I think that hasn't changed, that it would still be $250,000 to the borough, and the borough would, you know, disseminate some of that money out to the unorganized communities within the borough. But I haven't had a chance to look at this. I just got it, so.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Bursey? Or, as I noted, Kathy Wasserman, the executive director of AML, is on the telephone to answer any questions, too. All right. Well, thank you very much for your presentation.
All right. Thank you.
And it is now 9:15, and this meeting is adjourned.